today. It's good to have those of you that are visiting with us. We're glad you're here and hope that you can come back and be with us again. Today we're going to continue our study on lessons from the minor prophets. Minor prophets are called minor not because they were insignificant. They are called minor prophets because of the brevity of the lessons that are recorded, the books that are recorded for us. But they do have some major things to tell us, and that's why we're calling our series of lessons here Major Lessons from the Minor Prophets. Today, we want to talk about how in the midst of wickedness and in the midst of turmoil, God is still going to take care of those that are faithful to Him. Sometimes in the midst of these messages that we see where there's great rebuke for those that are wicked, we fail to see what God is doing and His promises for the righteous. When I was a junior in high school, the summer before my junior year, we moved from Columbus, Georgia to Dothan, Alabama. You know, that's not a huge distance from those two places, but the two schools were really, really different. Columbus High School and Dothan High School were pretty different. And one of the things that I remember in my junior year was my chemistry class. And there were a lot of discipline problems in that class. There were a lot of troublemakers. So there were a big percentage of people in that class that caused problems. And I think part of that was that the teacher was not a good disciplinarian and kind of just let things go that should have been handled. But, you know, when she did try to handle things, everybody had to suffer. It wasn't everybody that was causing the problem. And don't we realize that sometimes? You families that have more than one child, you know, that doesn't one child doing something wrong sometimes cause the whole family to have to suffer? Or, you know, in my family, we had three boys and a girl, and, you know, somebody did something and nobody fessed up. It was Mr. Nobody did it. And everybody would have to be punished unless the person that did it fessed up to it. You know, Rex was smiling. I don't know why. Maybe Mr. Nobody lives at his house, too. But sometimes people suffer because of the actions of others, and certainly in that class that I was in, I didn't approve of what the troublemakers were doing, and I didn't consider myself to be a troublemaker. I was trying to, you know, be mild-mannered. I couldn't change the ones that were causing trouble, yet the whole class had to suffer because of the ones that were causing the problem. And not only did I felt like I had to suffer because of what the teacher was doing, I had to suffer because those that were causing the problem, you know, would persecute me too because I wouldn't join in on it. So sometimes you have that situation. And those of you that are in school, you can probably relate to that. Those of you that were in school can relate to those kind of things in lots of areas of life perhaps. But what we see, the focus of the prophets that are prophesying here to Judah and Israel during this time, you know, much of the time the nations were not being righteous. They were not serving God. You know, they had their periods of ups and downs, but on the most part, as a whole, then the condition of the nation would be very poor spiritually. Even if they were prospering economically, or, you know, in contrast to other nations, there was still a lot of spiritual problems. But when we see the focus of the prophets, you know, calling out the nations for being in the condition that they're in, you still see this remnant. You still see that there are those that will be serving God, and that God recognizes those and takes care of those. And, you know, a lot of times that voice may not be heard as loudly. When we think about that, I think about the 12 spies that went in to spy out the land of Canaan. We know the two voices, and we remember their names, Joshua and Caleb, but we don't remember the names of the others, even though they're listed for us. But what was important that time is those two voices weren't heard. It was the voices of the ten that were, and we know what happened because of that. But when we look at the messages of the minor prophets, we see the overall message of doom because of the condition of the nations as a whole. But what about those that are there that are righteous? They're there even though their voices may not be heard at the time. In Psalm 73, verses 11 to 17. This is the Psalm of Asaph that laments the condition of the wicked. That the wicked seem to be getting everything that they want. You know, they're wicked, they're destructive, they're not servants of God, yet they're prospering, they're getting everything that they desire. How is that fair? Let's pick up in verse 11. It says, "And they say, how does God know? Is there knowledge in the Most High? Behold, these are the ungodly who are always at ease. They increase in riches. Surely I have cleansed my heart in vain and washed my hands in innocence. For all day long I have been plagued and chastened every morning." Is that the way the righteous feel sometimes? I look at the wicked of the world and I see that they prosper and they get away with injustice. They have riches, they have honor, they have praise of men, they have high position in this world. They may even have high elected offices and get the praise and the riches that go along with that. And the psalmist is saying, how does God know? Does God know? Is God aware of this? Is God aware of the injustice that I see in the world? Is there knowledge in the Most High? Verse 15 said, "If I had said, I will speak thus." In other words, if I had said all these things that were on my mind, if I had taken all these questions and thoughts that I had, "Behold, I would have been untrue to the generation of your children. When I thought how to be understood this, it was too painful for me. Until I went into the sanctuary of God, then I understood their end." So you see the questions are asked, but the psalmist comes around and says, I do understand. Because God's made it clear to me, in the sanctuary of the Most High, I understand that those that seem to have everything now, I saw their end. That it's not always going to be that way. That there's not always going to be this seeming imbalance. It's going to be taken care of. The Most High, the Mighty, is going to take care of that. And we see this lesson many times throughout the book of the Minor Prophets. So we want to look at that this morning in several different passages. Let's first look at Habakkuk. And Habakkuk was one that expressed some of the same things as the psalmist. See, sometimes we watch the evening news with all the violence and injustice in the world. And in frustration, some may say, well, why isn't something being done about this? Why isn't God doing anything? Why do the wicked dishonor people and they prosper? Why do they get elected? Well, it's not a new feeling. Habakkuk felt that same way around 620 B.C. And much of the book is written about that very thing. Habakkuk chapter 1, verses 1 through 4. The burdens which the prophet Habakkuk saw. O Lord, how long shall I cry, and will you not hear? Even cry out to you violence, and you will not save. Why do you show me iniquity, and cause me to see trouble? For plundering and violence are before me. There is strife, and contention arises. Therefore the law is powerless. And justice never goes forth, for the wicked surround the righteous. Therefore, perverse judgment proceeds. So here we see that the righteous are being tested, and the prophet is expressing what may be on many people's mind, on his mind. All this is happening. Where is the Lord? Does he hear? You know, we're studying in our Sunday morning class the book of 1 Corinthians. And one thing that we've already noticed is that there were a lot of problems in Corinth. And Habakkuk is looking around and saying, this is the people of God? Can you imagine the Corinthians saying, well, these are the people of God? This is the church? Have you ever been in the situation where you've been among Christians who were not behaving the way that they should, that there was turmoil among the people of God, and said, these are the people of God? Does not much of the world that wants to ridicule religion say, these are the people of God? Look at what they're doing. And we need to realize that the hypocrites can cause many to turn away from God. In the day of Habakkuk, there were prophets and priests and kings that were talking about God, but they were living wickedly. Does that happen today? That there are many people that talk about God, but they live wickedly? This is something difficult to swallow. And so, Asaph and Habakkuk wondered, what's God doing here? And this is a test that we all have to pass. This kind of questioning is something that is a test we have to pass. Romans chapter 2, verses 23 and 24. Paul says, you who make boast in the law, do you dishonor God through breaking the law? For the name of God is blasphemed among the Gentiles because of you. So Paul was telling the Jews that your failure to keep the law, even though you boast in the old law, you dishonored God for the way that you behave, the way things that you do. You boast in the law, but you don't keep the law. And God is the one who's being dishonored. You're causing dishonor to God because of the way that you act and the way that you behave. Romans chapter 3 and verse 4 says, let God be true, but every man a liar, as it is written, that you may be justified in your words and may overcome when you are judged. What we need to remember is, even though there are hypocrites in this world, there may be hypocrites even among the people of God. The question is, do we let hypocrites come between us and God? You know, one of the things that many people use as an excuse not to assemble with the saints, if you ask, why don't you worship God? Why aren't you faithful? Well, that church is full of hypocrites. I'm not going to go there because I know somebody that's a hypocrite. I know several people that are hypocrites. And they may go on and say, that person are the ones that I think are hypocrites. So they're not going to serve God because they're hypocrites. Well, what does that mean? That means that they're going to spend eternity with them. If you use hypocrites and those that don't serve God as the excuse not to serve, you're going to be in the same destiny in eternity as those that you're using as an excuse to keep you away from serving God. I've used the example before of going to a football game. You know, there's people that go to a football game that aren't really interested in football. That may not be the case with the majority, but there's a lot of football games we've gone to just to see the band. And then we're upset that people are walking around during halftime when they should be sitting down watching the band with the rest of us. That's the time when they should be sitting there watching instead of walking around and getting in front of us. Oh, we're hypocrites, aren't we? Because we're not there to see football. What if the rest of the football fans said, I'm not going to go to that game because I know there's hypocrites there. They are not here to watch the game. They're here because they like the concession stand. They're here because they like the band. Of course not. I mean, they're dedicated to the cause. They're dedicated to go see the game. They don't really care why everybody else is there. And you know what? When it comes to our service to God, we cannot let those who are not serving God get in the way of our service to God. If our faithfulness depends on numbers, if our faithfulness depends on what everybody else is doing, then we will fail the test. In Amos chapter 2, verses 6 through 7, Amos says, Thus says the Lord, For three transgressions of Israel, and for four, I will not turn away its punishment, because they sell the righteous for silver, and the poor for a pair of sandals. They pant after the dust of the earth, which is on the head of the poor. They pervert the way of the humble. A man and his father go into the same girl to defile my holy name. You know, Amos is painting a picture of these are people of God who should not be behaving in this way. And this is another test of the righteous. Can you imagine how the righteous feel when they see this kind of thing? And can you imagine how the righteous feel when they feel like they're powerless to do anything about it? Amos is saying, the Lord's not going to forget these things. I'm not going to turn away from my punishment. These things need to stop. But what do the righteous do? Let's look at Amos chapter 5, verses 12 and 13. For I know your manifold transgressions and your mighty sins, afflicting the just and taking bribes. So here the wicked, they're afflicting those that are righteous. They're afflicting the poor. They're afflicting the just. Diverting the poor from justice at the gate. Therefore, the prudent keep silent at that time, for it is an evil time. In other words, there's some that are righteous. They're prudent. They're just going to have to hold their tongue, and they're just going to have to wait this out. Wait on the Lord. And how hard would it be when it says they're being slandered, they're being taken advantage of, the poor are being turned away, the just are being afflicted. How hard it is to keep silent when you're being taken advantage of. This is a test of the righteous. Let's look further in Amos. Amos chapter 8, rather, verses 4 through 6. Hear this, you who swallow up the needy and make the poor of the land fail, saying, When will the new moon be passed that we may sell grain, and the Sabbath that we may trade wheat, making the epaph small and the shekel large, falsifying the scales by deceit, that we may buy the poor for silver, and the needy for a pair of sandals, and even sell the bad wheat. What's going on? The people of God are having to deal with people that are dishonest. They're being taken advantage of. Those that are selling grain, selling food, they're falsifying the scales. Maybe some of you remember the old Norman Rockwell painting where the woman is at the butcher shop and the butcher is weighing the meat, and you see that the butcher has his thumb on the scale and the woman on the other side has her finger underneath the scale. They're both trying to cheat. And that's what's being described here. They falsify the scales. They're trying to charge you too much money. You're living in a world where people are taking advantage of you on every turn. And they get away with it. And sometimes when that happens, it could be like in Job's day. when somebody is doing well and everything's going well for them, Job's friends assume, well, when things are going well for you, then that means God is on your side. But when you're suffering like you are, surely you have done something amiss. You have been evil and you're withholding information from us, Job. What is it that you've really done? And here in the day of Amos, you have those that are taking advantage of others who are profiting from it. But that doesn't mean that they're right and that God approves. Matthew chapter 7 and verse 6. Jesus says, "Don't give what is holy to the dogs, nor cast your pearls before swine, lest they trample them under their feet and turn and tear you in pieces." If you speak up when you're righteous, you endure scorn at times. It's a test for the righteous. There were righteous among the wickedness in the days of the minor prophets. It was something painful to be around. And it's painful when there's judgment that's coming and you can't do anything about it. In Habakkuk chapter 1, verses 5 and 6, the prophet says, "Look among the nations and watch and be utterly astounded. For I will work a work in your days which you would not believe, though it were told you. For indeed I am raising up the Chaldeans, a bitter and hasty nation, which marches through the breadth of the earth to possess dwelling places that are not theirs." Skipping to verses 12 and 13. "Are you not from everlasting, O Lord my God, my Holy One? We shall not die. O Lord, you have appointed them for judgment. O Rock, you have marked them for correction. You are pure, of purer eyes than to behold evil, and cannot look on wickedness. Why do you look on those who deal treacherously and hold your tongue when the wicked devours a person more righteous than he?" What we see here is that God says He is going to punish those who are wicked. And when Habakkuk prays to God, he gets an answer that's troubling. Because this is going to be bad. The Chaldeans are going to be raised up, and they're going to possess places that are not theirs. There is judgment that is coming. And what can Habakkuk do? Habakkuk chapter 2, verses 1 and 3, he says, "I will stand my watch. I will set myself on the rampart and watch what he will say to me, and what I will answer when I am corrected. And the Lord answered me and said, 'Write the vision and make it plain on the tablets, that he may run who reads it. For the vision is yet for an appointed time, but at the end it will speak and it will not lie. Though it tarries, wait for it, because it will surely come. It will not tarry.'" Habakkuk wants a different answer. He prays and gets the same answer. It's coming. Judgment is coming. Have you ever warned somebody about something? That you saw them going down the wrong path, you saw them going down the wrong direction, and if they continued in that path, it was going to mean destruction for them, that it was going to be something that would be terrible for them spiritually or for their family or whatever. If you keep going this way, don't you know what's going to happen to you? Leave Habakkuk in that situation. He sees what's going to happen. God's told him what's going to happen. And you can warn and you can plead. But then Habakkuk just has to wait for the train wreck, because people are going to be judged. That's one of the messages that we receive from the minor prophets, is that the righteous will be tested and that there is judgment. And we have to suffer many times along with the wicked because of what they've done. Just like an example we used at the beginning of the lesson, when we're punished as part of a group, even though we were not really part of it, the righteous suffer. Revelation chapter 8, verses 6 through 9. Revelation chapter 8, verses 6 through 9. The seven angels, which had sounded the seven trumpets, prepared themselves to sound. The angels sounded. The first angel sounded, and hail and fire followed, mingled with blood, and they were thrown from the earth. A third of the trees were burned up, and all the green grass was burned up. Then the second angel sounded, and something like a great mountain burning with fire was thrown into the sea, and a third of the sea became blood, and a third of the living creatures in the sea died, and a third of the ships were destroyed. What we see here is that the sounding of these trumpets, it represented judgment. And what we see in the minor prophets is that they, the people, as a group, they were going to suffer. They suffered persecution from within. They suffered at the hands of the wicked, and they were going to also suffer when the judgments came, the sounding of the trumpets came for the nation. Habakkuk chapter 3, verses 16 and 17 says, "When I heard, my body trembled, my lips quivered in the voice. Rottenness entered my bones. I trembled in myself that I might rest in the day of trouble when he comes up to the people. He will invade them with his troops. Though the fig tree may not blossom, nor the fruit on the vine, though the labor of the olive may fail, and the fields yield no fruit, though the flock may be cut off from the fold, and there will be no herd in the stalls." What we see here is, will the righteous suffer along with the rest? Yeah. Will the righteous be hungry when the rest of the nation is hungry? Yes. I know when the events occurred on September 11, 2001, we all remember how we felt. We all remember the consequences of that. There are economic consequences. Our economy right now is not in a good situation. Did we personally have anything to do with many of the things that have caused the economy to be what it is? Probably not. Most of us probably didn't have a whole lot to do with that. But are we suffering at the hands of what others have done? Are we suffering at the hands of what others in the world have done? Yeah, we do. If our country suffered further economic collapse, would Christians be exempt from the consequences? No. So what we see is that there are warnings given by the minor prophets. The warnings are not heeded. God judges the nations, and those that are just and those that are unjust, righteous and unrighteous, they all suffer because of the judgment, don't they? Micah chapter 7, verses 1 through 10. Prophet says, "Woe is me, for I am like those who gather summer fruits, like those who glean vintage grapes. There is no cluster to eat of the first ripe fruit which my soul desires. The faithful man has perished from the earth. There is no one upright among men. They all lie and wait for blood. Every man hunts his brother with a net, that they may successfully do evil with both hands. The prince asks for gifts. The judge seeks a bribe. The great man utters his evil desire, so they scheme together. The best of them is like a briar. The most upright is sharper than a thorn hedge. The day of your watchman and your punishment comes. Now shall be their perplexity. Do not trust in a friend. Do not put your confidence in a companion. Guard the doors of your mouth from her who lies in your bosom. For a son dishonors father. Father, daughter rises against mother. Daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. A man's enemies are the men of his own household. Therefore will I look to the Lord. I will wait for the God of my salvation. My God will hear me. Do not rejoice over me, my enemy. When I fall, I will arise. When I sit in darkness, the Lord will be a light to me. I will bear the indignation of the Lord because I have sinned against him. Until he pleads my case and executes justice for me, he will bring me forth to the light. I will see his righteousness. Then she who is my enemy will see, and shame will cover her who said to me, 'Where is the Lord your God?' My eyes will see her. Now she will be trampled like mud in the streets." you know, that starts off pretty pretty glim. And what we see is that the righteous suffer, but there's also humility that's expressed here by the prophet. Yes, I'm suffering, the righteous are suffering, but it's also a time to be reflective and introspective and humble. And we need to realize also that the righteous suffer, but God's watching out for them. Psalm 34, verses 15 through 19. The eyes of the Lord are on the righteous. His ears are open to their cry. The face of the Lord is against those who do evil, to cut off the remembrance of them from the earth. The righteous cry out, and the Lord hears and delivers them out of all their troubles. The Lord is near to those who have a broken heart, and saves such as who have a contrite spirit. Many are the afflictions of the righteous, but the Lord delivers him out of them all. God is going to act to help the righteous. But we need to realize that the help that we receive is that we are people of God, and that we are His, and that we have salvation, and we can overcome whatever happens to us in this world. How can the child of God overcome these things? Well, the child of God has resources that the world does not have, that no man can take away. Malachi chapter 3, verses 16 through 18 says, "Those who feared the Lord spoke to one another, and the Lord listened and heard them. So a book of remembrance was written before Him for those who fear the Lord and who meditate on His name. They shall be mine, says the Lord of hosts. On the day that I make them my jewels, I will spare them as a man spares his own son who serves him. Then again you shall discern between the righteous and the wicked, between the one who serves God and the one who does not serve Him." So you see, on one hand, we see how the righteous are persecuted and that they're victims of things that are going on in their environment around them that they cannot control, people taking advantage of them. But God gives us the promise and hope that He's going to remember the righteous. He's going to protect them. He's not going to disown them. As a man spares his own son who serves him, God spares us. But it says, on that day I will make them my jewels. So there's never a time when the child of God can do nothing, because we can pray. That's exactly what the prophet says in Habakkuk chapter 3. Verses 1 and 2, a prayer of Habakkuk the prophet. O Lord, I have heard your speech and was afraid. O Lord, revive your work in the midst of the years. In the midst of the years, make it known. In wrath, remember mercy. The prophet prays, and we need to pray. So the righteous suffer. The righteous go through affliction. But God comforts the righteous. Let's look at a few more verses and the lesson will be yours. How does God comfort the righteous? Habakkuk chapter 3, verse 13. You went forth for the salvation of your people, for the salvation of your anointed. You struck the head from the house of the wicked by laying bare the foundation to neck. The righteous really knew that the nation of Israel existed for a purpose, even though that was forgotten many times. They knew in advance that they would be in captivity. How long would it be? They didn't know. But they also knew of the promise of the Messiah. In Zephaniah chapter 3, verses 8 through 14. Therefore wait for me, says the Lord, until the day I rise up for plunder. My determination is to gather the nations to my assembly of kingdoms, to pour on them my indignation, all my fierce anger. All the earth will be devoured with the fire of my jealousy. For I will restore the peoples of pure language, that they may all call on the name of the Lord. to serve him with one accord from the rivers beyond the rivers of Ethiopia, my worshippers, the daughters of my dispersed ones. The daughters of my dispersed ones shall bring my offering. In that day you shall not be ashamed of your deeds in which you transgressed against me. For then I will take away from your midst those who rejoice in your pride, and you shall no longer be haughty in my holy mountain. I will leave in your midst a meek and humble people, and they shall trust in the name of the Lord. The remnant of Israel shall do no righteousness and speak no lies. They shall not be a deceitful tongue found in their mouth, for they shall feed their flocks and lie down, and no one shall make them afraid. Sing, O daughter of Zion. Shout, O Israel. Be glad and rejoice with all your heart, O daughter of Jerusalem. So you see, throughout all the messages of doom and gloom and judgment, there are also messages here in the Minor Prophets of hope that God is going to punish the wicked, they are going to receive their judgment, and that the people of God are going to be blessed, and that there are hopeful days in the future. God is going to bring good from the judgments of Israel. And so God does comfort the righteous, and we need to take comfort in that ourselves. In Psalm chapter 22, verses 3 through 5, the psalmist says, "You are holy, enthroned in the praises of Israel. Our fathers trusted in you. They were trusted, and you delivered them. They cried to you, and you were delivered. They trusted in you, and you were not ashamed." Our fathers trusted in you, and were delivered. So Jesus used the past workings of God to give Himself comfort, because He knew that God kept His promises in the past and He would keep them in the future, and that He would be glorified. In Zechariah chapter 9, God told the remnant how much He loved them. Zechariah chapter 9, verse 16, "The Lord their God will save them in that day, and the flock of His people, as the flock of His people, for they shall be like jewels of a crown, lifted like a banner over His land. For how great is its goodness, and how great its beauty! Grain shall make the young men strive, and new wine the young women. They shall be like jewels of a crown." The people of God needed to realize that waiting on the Lord would bring deliverance. That was the message of many of the minor prophets. That you're going through some hard times now, but waiting on the Lord will bring deliverance in the proper time. That's the same message that we need to understand. Waiting on the Lord will bring deliverance. While we may have to suffer ridicule, we have to suffer in this life with Satan throwing darts at us continuously, but we need to remain faithful and realize that God is our rock and God is our deliverer. And we can have the blessings of being that righteous remnant and having a home in heaven where we don't have to suffer with those problems anymore. Hope this lesson will be an encouragement to you to be faithful, and that you'll let God be your rock and deliverer, because you've been obedient to Christ and salvation by being baptized for remission of your sins and rising to walk a new life. If you haven't started that life, no better time to do that than to start today. If we can help you in any way, we'd like you to come while we stand together and sing.